All right, so let's kick off. We are on You'd Bet, I Would Bet, starting a new section, two dots, six lines down. We're basically going back to the Mishnah again. So we had a Mishnah on Duff Tet, I Would Bet. That was our, I think it was just our second Mishnah, actually, where the Mishnah had talked about the... It talked in more general terms about being liable for damages. Actually, maybe it's helpful just to briefly run through that mission again, or at least the first half of it. Kol shechavti b'shmiroso hichsharti es nisko. So anything that I am liable, anything I have to look after, right, that I have to... That I'm responsible to take care of, to watch over. Hichsharti es nisko, I've effectively prepared my damages payment. Doesn't mean you literally set it aside, but the phraseology of the mission is again something which the Gemara picked up on and worked on. Hichsharti b'miktas nisko, chavti b'tashlumi nisko. So again, we spent time trying to figure out what that was referring to, but that was a case which the Mishnah is again alluding to the fact that sometimes, even though you're only partially responsible to look after it, you're actually liable to pay the whole thing. We went through a lot of different cases for that, right? We talked about the pit, right? Dig down to 9, then the last one digs down to 10, and all those sorts of cases that we looked at then. And then we say, nechosim she'en bahim me'ila. That, and that's where we're going to come back to. That's the phrase. Nechosim, which are not liable to the me'ila, issue, right? Me'ila is a prohibition, which we'll discuss in just a moment. Nechosim shehein shel b'nei bris, nechosim hamiyuchadim, uvechol makom chutz mirshus hamiyuchedes, lemazik, and again, it goes through all those sorts of things. All of those are the ways in which you, the types of objects or things which, if damaged, will be liable to damages payments. Okay? That's effectively it. So, nechosim shein bahim me'ila. That's now back on Yud Bet Amud Bet. That's where we're picking up from. That phrase, right, what does that mean? That's what you're liable for, right? You're liable for something. You're liable for something which is not subject to the me'ila penalty. But what about things which are subject to the me'ila penalty? So they would be fine. So me'ila is basically a prohibition where you basically steal effectively something which is not, or you misuse something which is hekdesh, right? Which has been set aside, designated for a purpose, specifically for generally for the Bet HaMikdash. We'll go through a couple of examples as the Gemara goes through them, and hopefully it'll become a bit clearer. But the premise is basically, again, we're talking about things which are now subject to the Me'ila penalty, i.e. if I damage an ox which belongs to the temple. So again, that sounds like from the Mishnah that you wouldn't be liable for payment. If the ox from the temple damages you, then that wouldn't be liable for payment, I think. Shechiv tashlumei nezikin hu kashehuzku, right, when they are damaged. Nechosim she'en bahim me'ila. She'en bahim, only when they are not liable to this penalty, i.e. if they are liable to this penalty, namely if they belong to the temple, right, then you wouldn't be liable. Is that correct? I've got it the wrong way around?
It's property that doesn't have the prohibition of misusing it.
Exactly. So, i.e., something.
But it is.
Oh, that's consecrated. That's the next. That's the first line of the Gemara. We're going to get into that now. Okay. So, Gemara. The first thing the Gemara says is me'ilahu delesbe behu. Right. I.e., it doesn't have this me'ila issue, but ha mekadesh. Kodshi, right? Hamikdash Kodshi. It is still considered to be holy, i.e. the Gemara is basically saying that the mission seems to be very specific. It's saying that it's not liable to Me'ila, i.e. but you might have something, we're going to try and figure out whether there's something which you have which actually is considered to be consecrated, right? Is considered to be holy, but it's technically not liable to this Me'ila payment, and therefore that would be subject to issues of damages. Right, mantana. So, what exactly are we referring to here, or who is the tana that is responsible for this statement in the Mishnah? Omer Rabbi Yonason, excuse me, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Bekodshim Kalim Va'aliba Derbi Yosi Aglili. So we're going to have a couple of different answers to this question, but the first suggestion is that basically what we're referring to here, what the Mishnah is referring to here, is what we call Kodshim Kalim, and this is according to the opinion of Rabbi Yosi Aglili, which again we'll explain what Kodshim Kalim are in just a second. But what's the opinion of Rabbi Yosi Aglili is that these Kodshim Kalim are considered to be, to Omar, Momon Bailimhu. They are considered to be the property of the owners themselves. Okay, and therefore, since they're the property of the owners, therefore they're not subject to this Me'ila penalty. So what's Kodshim Kalim? So we'll try and cover this. This is very big topics, but we'll try and put it simply. So there's... broadly speaking, two different types of two different types of sacrifices that are brought in the temple, right? One is what we call Kodshe Kodshim, and one is what we call Kodshe Kalim. It means holy, holy sacrifices, and, you know, light, simple holy sacrifices, right? Not so holy. So the Kodshe Kodshim are tend to be things which are basically end up being much more connected to the temple, i.e. they stay as part of the temple. So for instance, a korban mincha, right, as an example, is something which happens in the temple, right, doesn't involve anybody else, or even a korban chatos, where you bring a sin offering, right? So that offering, in a sense, remains as much more part of the temple. But you have what we call a shlomim, right? A shlomim there are many types of shlomim, but that's the example that we'll go with for now. So, for instance, one type of shlomim, I think actually a korban pesach, unless I'm mistaken, is considered to be a shlomim. Let's see that. So anyway, but basically certain types of sacrifices are what we call Kodshim Kalim, and the owners will eat from these sacrifices, and will have a significant sort of part of this entire process. Let's see if Rashi clarifies some of the details of this. So he doesn't actually give an example over here. Ezer Mekohen talks about which are. Kodshim Kalim. Yeah, which Kodshim Kalim. No, it talks about where. It talks about where.
Yes, but it says which are which type, doesn't it? It may not say. It's talking about where, but it tells you which type. It says the Korban Pesach is in the last one. It says that's Kalim.
Yes, correct. Korban Pesach is part of the Kalim. But I don't know if it has any... Does it have a... It has a list of all of the...
I don't know if it's an exhaustive list, but it probably is,
isn't
it?
Kodshim Kalim. I don't remember that. Okay, great. Let's look it up. It has a list of... It definitely talks about Kodshim Kalim. Yes, great, because it goes through all the different types, or many of the different types of... Korban talks about where they are sacrificed. So, yes, it's... Yes, correct. Ola's another example. Oh, very. That's a good point. So you're right. There are some of them that sort of it does clarify in there, but it doesn't say. As I said, I don't think there's a list. Shalom and Kodesh and Kalim, as we said. Habachor Ramasavar Pesach. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Bechor is an important one actually, because Bechor will come on to also within the Gemara. Okay. So Bechor Ma'aser Pesach. Hatoda is another good example. Toda is Kodshim Kalim. So Korban Toda is again brought and shared out amongst many people afterwards, right? Whereas, yeah, as you say, Ha'ola Kodshe Kodshim, Chatos HaTzibur VaYochid. It doesn't say over here that they're Kodshe Kodshim, but they are Kodshe Kodshim. So again, all these different...
What surprises me here, I mean, it says here the distinction of the Kodshe Kodshim are normally those things that are, as you said, used in the temple, eaten by the Kohanim or whatever. The others are something that you will offer up and then eat yourself or share out.
Not necessarily, but yes.
Yeah, but that's how it seems to be. So you're responsible for until such time as it's sacrificed. But I thought the whole idea of declaring something hectic is that item specifically is what needs to be delivered. We suggest here that that's not the case.
Oh, so we haven't actually clarified what Rabbi Yosi Aglili means when he says Mammon Bailim Heim. Well, the only thing that we've taken from this at the moment is that is that they would be subject to damages payments, but we don't know any of the other details, meaning it's not going to be exactly like let's put it like this. It sounds to me like you're asking if I would put it in more halakhic terminology, isn't there still what we would call an isser hanar, right? A specific prohibition on benefiting from these types of things. So how can you just say it's, you know, mom and banim, it belongs to... So that's a good question. And I don't think Gemara talks about that, but I did see someone talk about that. If I remember correctly, there are different types of hanar, basically. There's different types of benefits. So, for instance, there are certain things which you're not allowed to benefit from them because, you know, they're off limits, right? Like basar v'cholov, right, as an example, right? So if you mix meat and milk together, if you cook meat and milk together, not only are you not allowed to eat that, but you're not allowed to benefit from it either. You're not allowed to feed it to your animals, not allowed to sell it, you're not allowed to do anything like that. There was an interesting shaila that came up a number of years ago as to whether you could do medical experiments with it. Or not, that came up in chemical experiments, and potentially you could argue that the prohibition of benefit is only in a case where it would be something that is edible, right? In a sense, even though there is a prohibition of benefit, not just eating it, but it also potentially still needs to be linked to it being something which is designed to be eaten, right? Which was an interesting side bit. Anyway, so basar b'cholov, as I said, is an example of, let's say, something which is purely, a sort of standard, no benefit whatsoever. Other things, so you can have a prohibition against benefit where it's closer to, particularly in the area of Hekdash, where the goal here is not simply that the Torah has declared this off-limits, right, like in the way that basar b'cholov sort of declared off-limits, or kilayim is declared off-limits, but it's more in the sense that you're prohibited to benefit from it because it's inappropriate to benefit from it. And in that case, and that seems to be what Rabbi Yossi Aglieli is talking about. So yes, it's inappropriate to benefit from it, but there may be sort of tangential ways in which it's not entirely off limits. Yeah, yes, it is off limits for standard benefit. You cannot use this cow to to plow your field or to whatever else you want to do with it. For whatever else, but it will have certain halachas basically, which will actually link back to you. And I think that's what Rabbi Yossi Aglieli is going to, or that's what we're going to try and clarify in Rabbi Yossi Aglieli's position. This is all really just background. I just wanted to point out the difference between kochi kochim and kochi kalim. And as I said, it's a big topic, but for simplicity, we'll basically focus on the fact that shalomim, which are generally offerings which are eaten by, or partially eaten at least, by the owners as well, will fall into this category of kochi kochim, whereas other types of things will fall into the category of kochim kalim. And again, at least according to Rabbi Yossi Haglili, the Gemara is at this point suggesting that his opinion, since his opinion is that they are considered to be mamon bailim, i.e., they are still considered to be the property of their owners, not to be used for anything they want, as Andy clarified, but at least in this regard, considered to be property of their owners, therefore they would still be subject to damages payments. And that's our first suggestion of something which is not subject to the prohibition of Me'ilah, but yet is still considered to be consecrated. Right? Very much considered to be consecrated, but not subject to the prohibition of Me'ilah, of benefit, or of theft, really. Yeah, misuse, let's call it. Okay, so that's just the beginning. So that's our suggestion. So now we're going to basically try and figure out, we're going to go through a few different other brises, mishnas, you know, to try and figure out basically where else do we see this opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglieli, or does it clash with other mishnayos and other brises, basically just to sort of get to down to the details of where it applies and where it doesn't apply. So we're about 7 lines from the top, maybe a bit more. 8, 9 lines from the top. D'Tanya. Okay, now this is the Brisa where we get this opinion from. Uma'ala me'al b'Hashem. Ma'al Ba'ashem, excuse me. U'ma'alo ma'al ba'ashem. That's the verse, right? In Parashas Tzav, I think. Second Parashas in Vayikra. Where the Torah says, if you take something, if you steal something, misuse it from God, l'rabos, this comes to include kodshim kalim, these lower level consecrated sacrifices, shehem momona divrei Rabbi Yosi HaGlili, because even though they belong to the person, to the owner, that's according to Rabbi Yosi HaGlili, v'hotanan. The Gemara wants to ask, surely we have a Mishnah which tells us otherwise, and generally, the general principle is if we have a one Mishnah, i.e., basically, if we're going to have a Mishnah which tells us, which doesn't follow the opinion of Rabbi Yosi HaGlili, and we're trying to establish this Mishnah in Bava Kamma, i.e., the line that says, Nechosim She'ein Bahim Ma'ila, is according to Rabbi Yosi HaGlili, that's a little bit of a contradiction, okay? It's not insurmountable, but we generally like to have things, you know, fit together. We like to say that the Mishnah as a corpus is not going to sort of self-contradict too much. And therefore, v'hotanan, we're trying to figure out, doesn't this contradict another Mishnah that we have elsewhere? Right? This Mishnah, Bava Kamma, we've said, this line seems to be according to Rabbi Yosi HaGlili's opinion. V'hotanan, don't we have another Mishnah which seems to go against that? Hamakadesh Bechelko, basically uses, again, this is in a world that we don't live in, but you can't try these things nowadays, but in theory you can be Mekadesh, right? You can get married. There is the kiddushin part of a marriage, right? We nowadays obviously just give a ring, but in theory you could give anything, right? Anything of monetary value. So bechelkosh. So you want to basically get married using this, and it's a great. This is the sort of thing that comes up throughout the Gemara many, many times because it's a great. It's a great way to talk about. It seems to come up with the sort of the very, you know, interesting cases which help us really understand the details. So, again, a person's trying to get married, wants to get married, b'chelko, i.e. with their part that they have received from a karbon. Bein b'kodshe kodshim, u'bein b'kodshe kalim. Right? Whether we're talking about the, you know, more significant, the kodshe kodshim, the holy holy, or the secondary level, right, i.e. the shlomim that we're talking about over here, eino mekudeshes, the kiddushin does not work. And the implication seems to be that it's because it doesn't belong to you, right? Because it's nothing to do with you. If it was your, we just said, Rabbi Yosi HaGlili says, momon ba'alim hu, right, that it's your property. If it's your property, then it should work. So the implication here seems to be that it doesn't work because it doesn't belong to you. The Kohanim own, we're not, you're sorry, property is different, I don't mean property like land, which actually they could own anyway, but yeah, of course they own property. What do you mean? A Kohen can own anything. A watch, a horse, whatever
so
they want.
So they're just saying that the fact that it's part of a sacrifice or something that's hedgish, which it doesn't yet own. So in other words, as long as it's something that it's yours, it's own, so when you are giving the ring or whatever, you
have to own it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Correct. You have to own it. The point is, you have to own this. And if, even though it's been given to you to eat, right, might not be yours, right? So that's what the point over here is, right? It doesn't belong to you, and therefore,
ain't no kodesh. Is the example that actually, if the priest does use that type of property, he is betrothed.
No,
he's not betrothed.
Correct.
Is it asking the question?
It doesn't sound like a question. To me, this is a direct quote from the Mishnah. So, Hamakadish Bechalka, a person tries to marry someone with the portion that they, you know, that has been given to them of a korban, right? Bein b'kodshe kadshim v'bein b'kodshe kalim, whether it's whichever type of korban it is, ainu mekudeshes, the kiddushin doesn't work. Right, so the Gemara wants to suggest lema deloka Rabbi Yosi HaGlili. This sounds like it's not like the opinion of Rabbi Yosi HaGlili, because Rabbi Yosi HaGlili should say, at least according to our thinking at the moment, should say that if it's kodshim kalim, right, if it's this lower level, then momon ba'alim heim, it belongs to you, and therefore you should be able to effect a marriage through this, right, or to effect a kiddushin, which is only really half of what we call marriage now.
Well, the difference would be presumably if it's kodshim kalim, it would still belong to the donor.
So the donor. So let's say the donor.
So the priest wouldn't be able to betrothed with it because it doesn't belong to her.
It doesn't say who's doing the betrothal. Anyone. It seems to say anyone. Hamakadish bechelko. With your. So you do it. So we're talking about the donor now. The donor cannot do it either.
Not the priest.
In anyone. Hamakadish bechelko with his portion. Whoever is doing it with the portion that they have in this korban, right? The kiddushin doesn't work.
Are you saying basically because it hasn't vested yet?
No, you'd say if it was the donor, you'd say he could use it because it's in his property.
That's the question. According to Abiyosi Aglili, we should be saying that he can't, and yet the Mishnah says he can't. Right, so if the Mishnah is saying he can't, then this sounds like it's against Rabbi Yossi Aglili, which means that we have one Mishnah which is following the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and the other Mishnah which is not following the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, which is, as I said, not insurmountable, but troubling. So Gemara likes it to be, to flow, it should be, That's the challenge that we have at the moment. So our filu term Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So what we're basically going to do is say, no, okay, you can still fit Rabbi Yossi Aglili's opinion into this, and he still he would agree that the marriage doesn't work, that this kiddushin doesn't work. Our filu term Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Why? Ki amar Rabbi Yossi Aglili, when he says momon bailim, when he's that, his statement that this kodshim kalim belongs to or is the property of the owner, mechayim, that's while the animal is still alive. Aval achar shchita, once it's already become a korban, and clear that the other Mishnah is talking about once it's already become a korban, because it's talking about bechelko, i.e. he has now been given the portion in this animal, right? You've been given the portion of this korban. So once l'achar shchita, afilu Rabbi Yossi Aglili mode, dechi kazachu, mishulchon gavoha kazachu. Right? That when you are given this meat, right? When you're given this portion, then Shulchan Gavoh Kazachu, then you are given it from Shulchan Gavoh, is like a nice term for the godly table or whatever. You know, effectively, it doesn't belong to you, right? It's coming from heavenly ownership, effectively. Okay, which is interesting. Yeah, Shulchan Gavoh Kazachu. I do have a feeling. Okay, let's see. We do have everybody. We do have everybody seemingly talking about a Cohen here. I'm less convinced that we're talking about the owner now, but I find it, I can't imagine that we wouldn't be. Okay, let's assume we are now. I thought there was more. All right.
The owner still has intention of not to own it. He may own it, but the intention is that it's hectic. So presumably he couldn't use it either. Presumably you can't offer someone a ring which or something which is your possession and then take it back.
You can. I mean, if they want to give it back, you can.
Yeah. Give it back. I
mean. Are there any kodosh which the original donor does get a portion?
I think so. I'm not an expert. I'm honest. That's the truth.
So can it possibly be with
the well? Oh, sorry. So yeah. Well, that's a good proof. So it must be. There must be some, otherwise the Mishnah wouldn't be saying it.
Oh, you were in doubt as to whether it is now. You were saying you're not so convinced.
Oh, I see. You mean maybe that's just going to the Cohen, you mean?
Yeah.
Maybe we're just talking about a Cohen here.
Yeah.
But then what's the proof? I think my point is, if we're talking about just the Cohen over here, so then just say that should be what we're talking about, right? We're talking about just the Cohen, and Rabbi Yossi Aglili is talking about...
And therefore it would be fine.
That's not the Gemara basically is saying Rabbi Yossi Aglili would agree that the kiddushin doesn't work. Sounds like that doesn't work for anybody. Right? I.e. even though he's of the opinion Momon Bainimhu, right, that this animal belongs to the owner or is considered to be the property of the owner, still wouldn't work for kiddushin, right? At least we're talking about bechelko. Once we're talking about the sacrifice, once we're talking about it being having been sacrificed, and actually you're basically doing it with, well, effectively you're doing it with a steak. Let's put it like that, right? We're talking about, or a lamb chop, right? That's what you're trying to do this kiddushin with. Okay, and again, the Gemara is saying that should be a contradiction to our Mishnah, because that makes it sound like this doesn't belong to the owner. And the Gemara basically concludes and says, yes, in this case it doesn't belong to the owner, i.e. once it's meat, right, then it no longer is considered to be belong to the owner, even according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. When we're talking about damages, right, we're not talking about damages to sacrificial meat, we're talking about damages to an animal that has been consecrated to be offered as a sacrifice, right? Once we're talking about the animal, then Rabbi Yossi Aglili is of the opinion that is considered to be property of the owner, and therefore, even though it's been consecrated, would still be liable to the penalty to damages, basically, right? To damages payments. Okay, so that's one issue. But again, we're going to continue on that line, and we've said, okay, great. So now we've said that Rabbi Yossi Aglili would agree that we're only talking about when the animal is alive. Umeichayim miyoma. Right now, we're still not convinced of that. The Gemara is going to, you know, find another challenging Mishnah, even while the animal's still alive. Umeichayim miyoma. Do we really follow the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili even while the animal's alive? V'hotanan. We have another Mishnah. Bechor. Right, this is now a firstborn animal of a basically of an animal that you can bring as a sacrifice, right? So there's not a horse or something like that, right? An animal, a cow. Don't get many of these questions now, but there was a fellow who owned a farm in my yeshiva. There was a fellow whose parents owned the farm, and I think he used to have these sort of bechor questions every so often. Don't get many of them. But v'hotanan, bechor mochrin osa, right, you can sell it, tam chai, right, i.e. you can sell it, we're talking about tam means it doesn't have a blemish, i.e. it would be fitting to be sacrificed, chai, right, while it is still alive, uba'al mum chai, v'shochot, right, mekachin bo isha. Right, v'shochot mekachin bo isha. V'omer Rab Nachman, omer Rabba bar Avuha, lo shanu ela bechor bizman hazeh. Right, we're talking about, they clarify that this Mishnah must be talking about only in nowadays, i.e. where there's no temple where you're going to actually bring this bechor as a sacrifice. Kiven de lo chozi lahakrova, right, because you cannot possibly bring this as a sacrifice. Islehu lakonim zechia begavayu. And therefore, since you can't bring it as a korban, therefore the kohen, in a sense, gets a certain, basically has a certain zechut, right, the way the Gemara phrases it. It basically means that he will receive it to be his. Avol bizman shebeis hamikdash kayim dechazi la'akrova lo, right, when it's when we're talking about temple times, then this entire issue wouldn't work, because the bechor would not be considered to be the money of the kohen, would not be considered to be the property of the kohen, right, and therefore it wouldn't work for this kiddushin, right, mekadshin bo isha. So the Mishnah had said basically that this bechor, this firstborn, you could sell it, tam chai ubal mum. But if it's a bal mum, then chai v'shachut mekachin boza isha. Right, that you could use this as the, i.e., it belongs to you in the fullest sense. Right, it belongs to you. It belongs to the kohen in this particular case. Now again, with in practical terms, when we're talking about a kohen nowadays, I think we've mentioned this in the past. Nowadays, we're mostly talking about what we call kohani chazaka, right? Someone who we assume is a kohen, right? But we wouldn't actually. I don't think we'd do this nowadays unless they have really clear proof, right, going all the way back that they really are a kohen. Because there, it's more of an area of doubt, and therefore we it's based on what we call chazaka, but. Like we don't actually practice, although we still have to give although we separate still the presents to give to the Kohen, we don't usually give them to the Kohen because, again, the Kohen shouldn't be eating them because there's a prohibition against someone who's not a Kohen eating them. So there, you want to be a little bit, we're a little bit stricter in that case of doubt. Like challah is a classic example of that, right? Challah, we separate challah, but you don't actually give it to the Kohen anymore because if you're not a Kohen, right, we're happy to call you out, but if you're not a Kohen, then a bit stuck if you eat that challah, right? That's no good. Therefore, we basically dispose of it in a nice way. Right.
It can never end up being hekdesh because there's no temple.
But a challah is not hekdesh. Challah is one of the gifts to give to a Kohen. So nothing to do with, meaning it's not nothing to do with a Kohen. Not nothing to do with the temple, but in a sense that does. Some things have fallen out and some things have. Once the temple's gone, all of the halachos that have to do with those sorts of areas are, well, no, I was going to say, need reanalysis. So some of them fall away, some of them are not necessarily linked to that, and some of them have been rabbinically reinstituted so that they don't fall out of practice. So let's say, Shmita is one of those things actually, which is probably derabbanan bizman hazeh, right? Which is probably rabbinically reinstituted nowadays, so that it doesn't nowadays without a temple. Exactly. Exactly. Where and so Bechor is again another example. Bechor, the gifts that are given to priests did not fall out of practice. Those are considered to be, unless I'm mistaken, Torah mitzvahs that still apply. The challenge nowadays, there are two. It's not just about the lack of temple to bring an offering. Nowadays, the other challenge is we don't always know who's a Kohen and who's not. That's the other challenge that we have. So that's the, Okay. And again, certain things which haven't fallen, other things which haven't fallen out of practice at all are things like the holiness of the, although that's a bit debated actually, but let's say the holiness of the Temple Mount, you know, and to what extent you can go up there or not. And certain people say, you know, they know the areas, they don't know the areas, so that's a bit of a hotly debated issue. But as a general principle, right, you cannot, you know, you still sort of can't just do whatever you want on that site, right? Okay. So we've seemed to have another Mishnah which contradicts Rabbi Yossi Haglili's opinion, right? Which seems to contradict Rabbi Yossi Haglili's opinion, and therefore no good for us because as we said, we want to have all the Mishnahs sort of line up well, i.e., if our Mishnah in Bava Kamma is going to be according to the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, so too this one should also follow that opinion. Follow that opinion. Right, that's what we said. That's referring to nowadays. Right. We have another question. Rava l'Rav Nachman. Rava asked Rav Nachman as follows, right? We had Rav Nachman's opinion brought earlier in the... Didn't we have Rav Nachman earlier? Maybe not. Where was that? Oh, yeah, over here. Yeah, exactly. Correct. Okay. So, Rav Nachman, he wants to know the following. Right, so this is our very question. Umashani Ravina, he answers, we're talking about a Bechor outside of the land of Israel, right? Even when the temple was around, and according to the opinion of Reb Shimon, the Omar, im ba'u tamimim yakrivu, im ba'u in lechatchila lo. So basically, he's of the opinion as follows: that if they are brought to the land of Israel, im ba'u tamimim, right? If they make it to the land of Israel, these animals, and they are and they're still intact, right? There's still no blemishes. They still can be sacrificed, as they can still be brought as a korban. Then that's what you should do. Yakrivu. You should bring them as a korban. Im ba'u, the Gemara makes diuk, right? Basically infers that is we're only talking about a case where they have already come, i.e. what we call b'dievet, b'diavat, right? It's already happened. In ba'u, they've already come. They're already here. Now we've got one question facing us. The in, that's what you should do. Lechat chila, but if you're asking the question beforehand, should they be brought to Israel as a carbon, then lo, right? I.e. you don't send them to Israel to be brought as a carbon, right? I.e. it's better, this is the opinion of Reb Shimon, i.e. you're better off leaving the Bechor outside of the lands of Israel, not bringing it as a carbon, and potentially again this links up with Rabbi Yossi Aglili, this opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Momon Bailimhu. Right? And therefore that seems to be the case that we're talking about. Right? Therefore that's in a sense why they don't why you cannot make do this kiddushin with this animal, right? I.e., basically we're talking about different cases. So we've basically established that this Mishnah is talking about where we're talking about a Kohen selling. Either we're talking about one suggestion is that we're talking about nowadays, right? Not in temple times. I'm not sure if this is a separate suggestion or included in the same suggestion. I think, to be honest, I actually think it's together. I think you have to take both of them together. We're saying it has to be outside of Israel, and we're talking about nowadays. That's so far as I've understood it. Right, this opinion of Reb Shimon is Im ba'u b'choros mechutz la'aret la'aret Yisrael t'mim yakrivu ba'u in l'chat chilalo ela yoru ad sheyiz ba'u. I think you have to have both. Although maybe not. No, maybe not. I might take that back. So we're talking about either where it's nowadays, right? Either where we're talking about nowadays, or we're talking about outside of the land of Israel. And in either case, that's basically when the Bechor can be sold. That's when we're talking about the Bechor being sold, and therefore also talking about the second half, i.e., let's just find the language inside, i.e., Bechor Zman Azet, Kivin de la Chozila Krova, from earlier we said, right? So again. Okay. But either way, so whether they're together or they're not together, right? Whether you require both or you don't, I'm still not 100%. We'll have to, maybe we'll clarify that next time. But whether we're talking about both together or separately, the conclusion of all of this is, Vim Isa, right? Dechi Omar Rabbi Yossi Aglili Mamona Hu Mechayim, right? We said, we before basically said that the Mishnayos only fit together because Rabbi Yossi Aglili, when he says that the, when Rabbi Yossi Aglili says that the animal, that this consecrated animal is considered to be the property of its owners, that was only while it's still alive, right? And we proved that. We proved that later on, that Mishnah that said that you cannot do kiddushin with this portion of the sacrifice was after, right, after the sacrifice, and therefore even Rabbi Yossi Aglili would agree to that. Now we're saying that itself doesn't work. Why? Because let's turn over. Lishni ha Rabbi Yossi Aglili ha Rabbonon. Right? You just say basically the two differences. Ravina, right, who came up with this whole this whole sort of answer, talking about the fact that we're talking about Chutz La'aretz, could have simply said ha Rabbi Yossi Aglili ha Rabbonon. Right? In a sense, we just have a machlokas over here, not within the Mishnah itself, right? But over there, we just simply have this debate, i.e. Rav Nachman. Right? Because we have the only problem with having these these contradicting Mishnayos is when the Mishnah seems to be stating it as what we call a stam, right? As an opinion without a name to it. Because there, that seems to be almost like, you know, everyone is going to follow that. Everyone, unless we have a dissenting opinion. Whereas over here, we have Rav Nachman, right? Rav Nachman has made that statement. So rather than trying to come up with sort of funny cases, say, oh, no, we're only talking about nowadays, oh, we're only talking about outside of the land of Israel, all those sorts of things, you say very simply, Rav Nachman is following the opinion of Rabbanan, and the rest of the Mishnayos are following the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So what you see from here is that, and again, the Gemara basically seems to be taken from here, that Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that wouldn't have been good enough, i.e. that the Rabbi Yossi Aglili does still seem to have a problem with this, even while the animal is still alive. So Omar Lei, so we respond now, Matnos Kahuna Ka Omras, Shiny Matnos Kahuna, we're talking about here a case of presents to or gifts to a Kohen, right? It's a specific category of halacha, 24 different types of gifts that go to a Kohen. Shiny Matnos Kahuna, Dechi Kazachu, Mishulchan Gavoha Kazachu. Because those, although again, we give them to the Kohen, again, right? They clearly end up in his house, right, in his property, in his tummy, whatever, you know, wherever he is doing with them, right, they are considered to be, the Matnos Kahuna, in a sense, conceptually, are considered to be the Chinkazachu Mishulchan Gavoha Kazachu, that when you are partaking of them, when you are using them, this merit that you're getting, or this benefit that you're getting from them, is, again, this phrase, coming back to this phrase, Mishulchan Gavoha, a lovely phrase, talking about from the lofty table, right, from the heavenly table, as it were. You're not eating your own food, you're eating it Mishulchan Gavoha, and therefore, it still is not yours enough to be used in other senses, right? To be used as we said to effect this marriage, or to be sold, or anything like that. And therefore, we cannot simply say that this is a debate between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and. Therefore, we cannot say. So how do we conclude over here? Sorry. So are we throwing out this whole? It sounds like we're throwing out this whole Rabbi Yossi Aglili issue here. Therefore we say no, you can't, since you don't say, you can't just say it's Rabbi Yossi Aglili, you can't just say it's Rabbanon. Oh, sorry, no, so it does work in the end, i.e. this is specific, right, Matnos Kahuna is a specific type of case, and therefore this Mishnah is not contradicting our Mishnah does seemingly follow the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, therefore this consecrated animal is considered to be the property of its owners, and therefore is subject to damages, payments, etc. All that sort of things. What about our Mishnah over here, which is talking about, which seems to say that these Matnos Kahuna, right, that these gifts that are given to the priest don't seem to belong to them. So the Gemara concludes. And says, don't worry, that's specific to Matnos Kahuna. That's very specific to this area of halacha, because that in and of itself is considered to be eating or partaking from the heavenly table. Okay? All right, I think we're going to leave it there. We're going to leave it there for this week. Probably worth a little... All right. We'll leave it there for this week. We'll pick up the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph in either next week or 2 weeks' time. I'll confirm afterwards.